Welcome to the Round 9 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined, as per usual, by FB Donkey.
G'day, everyone.
You must be in very good spirits, mate, because you smashed it. You smashed it, so well done to you.
In a tough week, I had a good week, yeah.
That's not like you. Not playing it up, to be honest. So I'm expecting more fireworks when we get to the personal update. Anyway, we've got special guest Faz back with us for this week. So thanks very much for joining us, Faz.
Yeah, g'day, lads. And hello to all the listeners out there. Thanks for having me on again.
We take our questions each week from Facebook and Twitter, so you can hit us up there on a Tuesday if you're looking to ask us questions for the show. This week, it's kind of a mixed bag, to be honest. The main sort of focus will actually be backline premiums. There's a lot of injuries down back, a lot of rookies nearing their peak. We will cover a range of other questions, but it is a fair mixed bag. We'll start off straight away with our personal update, so we'll just rip the Band-Aid off and you can kick it off, Mark.
So I ended up with 2260 this week. Pretty good result. I actually jumped up 4,771 ranking spots to 2,351. So that's starting to get pretty good, I think, sort of top 1% and heading in the right direction anyway, and sort of some chance to get into the top 1,000 at some stage, I guess. Now just need to consolidate at this stage. In the last 2 weeks, I've had opportunities to do double downgrades, but I've actually done one down and one up in both of those weeks, and I think that's probably helped my scoring a little bit because I had brought Boyd and Montagna in and they both scored about 110 on the weekend. I was at the footy with you, Marcus, on Saturday, and I had big plans to bring in Ben Keys and do the double downgrade, but just on the way home actually changed my mind on the Saturday night and went with Montagna just because it's in brand play. McPherson was doing all right, Hopper was doing well, and so I could see that if I double downgraded and I still wanted to pick up one of those other guys as a downgrade option, I probably wouldn't be able to do it and I'd probably be carrying too much cash. And I was a bit worried about getting stuck with all that cash if a premium got injured as well. So yeah, ended up going the one down, one up. Pretty lucky. The only real low rookie I had on the ground was Mitch Brown. I had Burn Jones on the bench and Menadue on the bench and missed sort of the Papley and Brody Smith scores. So mainly lucky avoiding the really low scores. How did you go?
It was a pretty disastrous round. I think it couldn't have gone much worse. So all things considered, 2091, I'll take that. Still moved me back into the top 5,000. So people must have really struggled this last round. So I'm sitting at 4,627. And
so that's about double my ranking.
Good from you. I will explain some of the misfortune my team endured. So I had Ruggles on as emergency and I took Mitch Brown instead, who scored 29. Of course, Adams out. I also had Toby Green out, which I don't think you fellas have. Brad Crouch. Oh, what a genius hold that was. Comes back and scores 50 and this week 46. So he was not on ground for me. Put him as emergency. So Keys at least did okay with 76 in his spot. Ollie Wine still continues to be super average.
That's actually just his disposal. Like, he is actually getting the ball. He's getting the contested ball. But he just keeps turning it over.
Mate, I know. I know it's painful. If anyone's thinking about bringing him in, don't. I don't think he's a top eight midfielder this year. And then I had Connor Menadue on field because Green was out. Everyone had Wells out. I also had Barlow out. So the team had quite a few poor scores, like scores under 40, and that really dragged it down. But yeah, not too bad. Faz, how'd you go?
I'm a bit worried. I only scored about 20 points more than you, and I'm pretty enthusiastic. Not as much doom and gloom as you are about the team. It says a bit that my ranking went up 9,000 places just this week. So, the overall is not looking too flash at 37,000th, but it's going in the right direction. So happy about that. The trades this week were Mills and McCarthy out for Montagna and Petrarca. So pretty happy with both of their results. I think it was really the midfield that saved me this week. I had Danger, Pendlebury, Hanbury, Libba all, you know, pulling their weight in the midfield, which sort of made up for a few of my poorer scores, like Seedsman and Jamie McMillan's not turning out to be the greatest of picks.
Hopefully the next time we get you on, you're also moving up 9,000 spots.
Yeah, that'll be I'll come on every week, yeah.
In terms of our group update, the leader for this week, he scored 2293, and that's Jared's Falcons. And with that score, he moved up into the top 1,000 at 829th. So congrats to you. That's a huge score.
Only 30-odd more than me, though. I almost won the group.
Yeah, I was going to mention it anyway. But you'll be happy to know you were second in the group this week. So congrats to you, Mark. Darren's, I already did this. He was 18th last week, and he scored 21.97, moved to 12th, and leads our group. So congratulations to you, Daz. Hopefully you can keep that up. Don't forget, we are on patreon.com/supercoachcoach for anyone looking to help contribute to the running cost of the show. Very much appreciate that. We'll just jump into the show now. We'll move through in this order. So we'll cover the injuries first, then look at the rookie ins, and then finish by looking at some general outs and ins, mid prices and premium. So we'll start with this question from Josh Paul: Laird and Adams in defense. Will one of these play? So the major news is that Hooley is out for actually 12 weeks, it looks like, with an injured wrist. And Adams, it looks like he's not coming back this week, at least another week out. Do you guys have an update on Rory Laird?
I think it was listed as one more week on the injury list today, and yeah, Adams is 1-2, so pretty tricky if you got those three guys, and you are going to have to trade Hooley out this week.
Mm-hmm. I think it kind of makes your decision easy. Like, it's not a good situation to be in, but Hooley is the obvious trade out target. You don't hold anyone for 12 weeks in this game, unfortunately.
And Hooley was supposed to be a really safe pick, and he's just gone like 50-50-50 and then lost a bunch of money and then got injured.
Just goes to show you there's a lot of luck in SuperCoach, so anyone on that unfortunate bandwagon has to trade him out. At least he didn't get injured in the game and tank more in price. So we'll move on to the next question, and that's Michelangelo Escander's question: best trade-in option for Hooley. So for the guys that are looking to trade Hooley, I thought we'd start off by just actually looking at value upgrade options, and then we'll actually go into Tarkin Tate's question from Twitter, which is to look at the top six defenders. So give you a couple options if you're struggling for cash and looking for a side swap this week, or if you've got plenty of cash in bank and you're trading out Hooley and you want to go for the best. So we'll start off with the value options, and I've listed four blokes here: Jared McVeigh, Corey Enright, Shane Savage, and Tom McDonald. I want to start off by talking about Tom McDonald because we have talked about him in the past, and he did score pretty well on the weekend. He scored 99, and so he's bottomed out, sort of. His break-even's 80, and he's priced at $372,000, a massive $145,000 cheaper than his starting price point. Tempt you, Faz? I don't think we got your thoughts on McDonald before.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a McDonald owner last year. Didn't get on as early as some did, but he did quite well for my team for probably the second half of the season. And so it's been unfortunate for those that have owned him that got onto him this year, thinking that he might take his game to another level to see just how poor his scoring has been. But at that price, $372,000, that seems like really, really good value to me. As you said, a break-even of 80, so you wouldn't think his price is going any lower than that. I didn't see the whole game on the weekend, but the part that I did see, he did a nice little shimmy in the back line, was looking pretty good. I know last year when Melbourne were doing quite poorly, we thought that maybe that's why he scored so highly. The ball was sort of spending so much time in their back line, and maybe this year with Melbourne doing a bit better, that's not so much the case. But that seems to be the way it goes with some of these key defenders, is that they come in ebbs and flows, their scoring, and unfortunately had a pretty long one from round two on to round seven. His highest score there was an 83, so hopefully that was just sort of a bad patch of form for his SuperCoach scoring, and he could turn that around now. And if anyone brings him in, I think this is a great week to do it. You can trade from Hooley to McDonald and get yourself a bit of cash, which is, you know, very nice option.
Seems like a massive trap to me, mate. I think that the concern is that Melbourne just don't have any other key defenders. Like, it's not like he can be released to play a bit more attacking. And last year, towards the end of the season, some of his good games were actually played as a forward, and I just don't see that happening this year. So, look, there's definitely potential there. Faz makes a lot of good points. There's no way I'd be bringing him in.
Shane Savage is one that you put on the run sheet, Faz. I don't think a lot of people would have been considering him so far this season, but I think people will also be surprised to hear that he's averaging 93 for the season so far. In the last six rounds, he's scored above 90 in five of them. The only one he didn't score 90 in was a 79, so very consistent. In under 5,000 teams, makes him a fairly exciting POD. His break-even 73 this week.
Yeah, he seems to be one of those guys that the team sort of look to get the ball into his hands and try and use him coming out of defence. And obviously St Kilda are a young team, they're transitioning, and Savage is in that age group that those developing teams don't have a lot of. St Kilda have still got some of the really more senior guys, the Montagnas and Rewalts, that are still sticking around from that previous era, and then bringing a lot of youth through. But I think Savage hits that nice middle point of a, don't know his age off the top of my head, but probably 24, 25, that's the kind of guy that they'd look to as a leader in the team. So I'd imagine that he's been using the ball quite a bit coming out of defence. He's got reasonably good skills. He takes the game on. So, you know, he might have some poorer games where he goes for those riskier kicks and, you know, they don't come off as much. But yeah, I think he just presents good value at 465. I doubt that he'd be scoring the massive scores that we see out of some of the defenders, Heath Shaws and Cade Simpsons. I don't think he'll be scoring up in the 140 range, but if you needed a guy that's around Hooley's price, if you didn't have much room to move, I think he'd be a good bet.
He has played 90 games now, aged 25, 8 seasons under his belt, so he's more than of the age profile to break out. Mark, your thoughts on him?
Very risky pick, I think, but it definitely could work out. Then St Kilda definitely like getting him to kick the ball, and Hawthorn were a bit sad to lose him because of his kicking skills. So look, I think that there's definitely potential there, and I think we're probably a little bit surprised it's taken him this long to produce this scoring. So from that perspective, he is just living up to his potential.
The last two blokes are perhaps a bit more traditional. Jared McVeigh, Corey Enright, are they too old, or would you consider them?
McVeigh was probably the pick of the lot for me last week, and I'd probably stick with that, even though we only got 68. My main concern is that his possession count is down this year based on previous years, and he does really rely on possessions to score points. So you'd would want to see that improve. Corey Enright, I've had the problem with him in the last couple of years. He's an awesome pick. He's a great scorer. He's awesome to watch, but he will definitely miss another game. Like, it's just guaranteed given his age and given Geelong doing really well and having quite a few defenders. So you get pretty wary about that.
And we were resting Enright even before we started this whole squad of 24, 25 policy. So now that we're looking to keep a rotating host of players in case of injury, Enright's definitely quite high up that list to be managed. So I'd agree with both you guys. McVeigh, though, does look like a fairly great value pick this week. I've picked him a couple weeks ago and hasn't broke the ton yet, but I'm hopeful it's around the corner.
Does have a break even of 122. So for those that don't need a trade this week, he could be one to just hold off on for one more week.
A lot of really expensive defenders around at the moment. I know that we don't really like paying full price for them, but there's a lot that are doing quite well just in the last few weeks, and they're all about 500,000 or even 550,000.
So on to the question about top six defenders, where all these high-scoring defenders are placed at. I've got 9 players here listed as candidates for the top six defenders, so I want to read them out first, and you guys can tell me if I've missed out on anyone. Otherwise, you can tell me your top six out of those 9. Heath Shaw, Cade Simpson, Sam Doherty, Alex Rance, Matty Boyd, Rory Laird, Jasper Pittard, Jimmy Bartel, and Jared McVeigh. Have I missed anyone first up?
No one that really stands out, mate. I guess there are other players that could potentially push into there, but I think that's a pretty solid top 9 to me.
Yeah, no glaring omissions. Josh Gibson's the one that, you know, if he pulls out a few more 190s, he could get himself up there, but I'd probably have more confidence in the 9 that you named over him.
So I'm going to put you guys on a spot now because we haven't pre-prepared this. Mark, can you give me the top 6?
If you get any of the top 9, you're doing really well. So I'd just be picking for that list if you can and going for whichever option out of that list offers a fair bit of value. We spoke a couple of weeks ago, Marcus, and you said, oh, Bartel would average 95 from here. And I said, you're probably being ridiculous. But Bartel's form in the last month has been awesome.
Yay!
Yay, yes. Having him in my team is great. I would say that Shaw and Boyd are probably guaranteed to be in that list. I think that the next line would be Simpson and Rance, and then the next two I would have in that list would be probably Doherty and Laird. And so that would be my top 6. And I think that Pittard, Bartel and McVeigh are all snapping at the heels and could easily move into that group.
I don't mind you listed all there, Mark. One issue, I think, is Matty Boyd's out this week, isn't he? He's been rubbed
suspended
out for one week, so unfortunately
I picked him up 2 weeks ago.
Bummer. I'd probably... The one guy I'd push a bit higher up the list, I think, would be Rory Laird. I think he's just shown enormous consistency with his scoring. He had one score of 79, but everything else has been above 90 so far this season. So I expect him to continue that scoring when he gets back. So I'd probably have him up there and maybe move Rance down the list a little bit.
All right, my number one's Shaw. My number two would be Boyd, if not for the injury concerns. Because of that, he probably moves down the list. So I have Laird as the next best. And then I'm going to put Doherty third, actually. And I've not pumped him up too much, but I don't know. He looks like he's consolidating on last year's breakout. And I'm hoping that he can keep it up. And then I would have probably Boyd around there. And then Rance. He's the best key position defender in the game at the moment. And attacks probably the best out of any key position defender in the game at the moment. So he comes in. And then I think I round my list out with Pittard, who I'm hoping breaks out this season. Simpson's very close behind him. And I think Bartel and McVay just miss out.
So I think that goes very much against the general public who are all jumping on Simpson this week.
I could definitely be wrong on that, but you know, he did just have a milestone game where he scored 125, and they've won four in a row, which I'm not saying that they can't keep winning, but four in a row is still not going to happen. I wouldn't say again for the rest of the season, but it could be proven wrong. All right, we move on to the last injury question for the week, and that's in relation to Gary Ablett. So there are question marks about him. He didn't finish the game on the weekend, still scored the 99, but since starting off the season with, you know, absolutely massive scores and scores that got us excited, 139, 120, 135 vintage Ablett scores, we've since not seen him score above 110. Think the talk is that he'll still come back into the team. Like, he might miss this week, but that overall he just has to play carrying niggles. Or where do you guys sit on Ablett?
It's hard to get a clear read on what is exactly wrong with him. I think if he misses this week, it'll be to do with the concussion that he suffered towards the end of the game. At 542, I don't think you can be trading him out unless he's been ruled out for a period of time. So just stick it out, and hopefully we see the real Ablett come back. Just for your information, Marcus, it was mentioned on the Gold Coast website today that Aaron Hall will face a fitness test with a shoulder injury this week.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I do not need more injuries right now, so that is nerve-wracking. I don't think any of us are recommending trading Ablett out, so we'll move on to the rookies now. We were going to look at the rookie outs, but Faz compiled a list of all the rookies, their averages, and their break-evens, and to be honest, I think like 85, 90, 95%, like pretty much most of the rookies have a break even that is close to, if not slightly below, their average.
Yeah, it's really only the guys that you guys have covered in the last few shows. So if anybody still has Wiedering, Lincoln McCarthy, Callum Mills, those three have break evens that look like Price could take a bit of a tank. But outside of that, then yeah, sort of Kerridge is the next closest, and he's got a break even of 72 and averaging 83, so he's not a must trade out by any means.
Mm-hmm. It's really a marginal decision this week, down to your team structure, where you feel like you actually need the premium on field over a rookie. So I'd base it more off scoring potential for your team. Even if you have some guy that's worth a plenty of cash, like Tipper, if you don't think he's likely to score, you know, above 60 on a regular basis, you might think that it's worth trading him out over a guy that is closer to his peak but isn't going to score as well. So very marginal calls, and we'll leave it in the hands of our now very knowledgeable listenership. So good luck with those decisions. We will talk about the ins for the week. So we'll start off by talking about Caden Brand, Mark, who you already mentioned previously and also in the show already. And this question is from @Ryan55, asking about Caden Brand. Thoughts on him, Mark?
I was pretty excited watching him in the preseason, and if he was named round one, I was actually going to have him in my team. But then he wasn't named round one and had to wait till a couple of weeks ago to get a game. I do know someone down at Box Hill, and they just can't stop raving about him. He actually picked him in his round one Supercoach team, just expecting him to play soon. If he's named this week again, he probably will come into my team. I'm not expecting huge scoring, but with Ruffy's news, which is very sad, looking like he might not be back this year, I think that they'll try and get some games into these key position young guys. When Schumacher comes back, I could be a bit of an issue for him, and who knows whether who goes out, whether it's O'Brien or him, or how they restructure up. So there's no guarantees. There never is with a rookie, but I guess I keep coming back to the preseason. In the interviews with Hodgie, they said, which rookie should we be looking out for this year? And he said, Caden Brand is your guy. Someone at his height that can run like that, you got to keep an eye on him. So yeah, I think he's a pretty good pick this week, even if his scoring potential isn't amazing.
I think the biggest boon to Brand is a lot of the great backline downgrade options came way too early. We had Byrne, Wagner, and Ruggles all in the same week. That's on top of Hartley coming through 1 week late. That's on top of, I mean, so many of the backline rookies that should be playing have already gone on to play an increase in value. And I think considering a lot of us still have backline rookies that we yet to cash in, that pushes up the attractiveness of Brand as well, because we need to downgrade these backline rookies and got to find a backline rookie somewhere, whether or not there's risk attached. Next question is about McPherson. So he has been on the radar for a little while. Brent Duran is asking whether he's a must-have this week. Faz, do you know much about him?
Yeah, so he's a pick 21 in last year's rookie draft. So he's right at bottom age player, only 18 years old. and very undersized for AFL footy. He's 174 centimetres, 72 kilos. So I would be doubtful that he'd be getting a game if the injury list at Gold Coast wasn't as extensive as it is right now. I think he probably would have spent this year just developing on their list. But, you know, all the news has been about how disastrous things are at Gold Coast. I think this week they finished the game with only 17 men on the field or something in their reserves. Mm. That's how bad their injury list is. And they're sort of scouting around Southport and those clubs for fill-in players to help just get enough, you know, guys to field the team in the reserve. So things are in pretty desperate state at the moment. That sort of gives him a game, and I think that also helps his job security. Obviously, there's not too many people that are going to be knocking down the door to get the spot in the team that he's currently got. One guy, though, that I think a lot of us are hoping will take his spot is Ryan Davis, who's been doing okay in the reserves, had 22 touches on the weekend and 11 tackles. So that's the way to get yourself back into contention for a spot.
Some of the points that Faz raises are excellent. I do like him more than Davis because he plays up around the ball a bit more. But if we've got Hopper coming through, I expect Matheson to be named this week. You might have Trengrove coming through at some stage. Like, if you're actually targeting those guys or even considering those guys, you can only make so many downgrades in your midfield. So that's something I'd really be looking to take into consideration, because I wouldn't want to have a McPherson that hadn't matured yet, and I really want to bring one of those guys in.
100% agree with that, and we've talked about that being a trap in the past. Downgrading too much in one position, leaving basically rookies that haven't peaked playing on field because you're waiting for them to mature in value.
We should forecast next week there'll probably be a fair bit of discussion about Hopper as well.
Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant first game, but like, what does he need to show this week to be bringing him in at 196,000? That's a lot of money for a rookie that plays for a side that is noted for really managing their first year rookies and how much game time they get.
We actually did get some questions about that, and I think he performed well enough to warrant consideration one week early, so we will talk about him shortly. But before we move on to him, Ben Crocker and Mason Redmond, mid forwards, both priced at 117,000, averaged 47.5 and 41.5 respectively, so scoring potential does look pretty poor. Faz, do you have any info about these two blokes?
Not a whole lot. They're both from last year's draft, so again, just the first year players, you know, pure rookies. I'd say with Crocker, they were involved in a win, so probably they're unlikely to change the team too much this week. But I know James Aish is playing in the twos right now for the Pies, so he's a guy that could come in and take his spot. And then for Mason Redmond, Sean Edwards and Marty Gleeson are both playing in the twos for the Bombers right now. They were getting games for Essendon last year when we had a full list of people to choose from, so I can't see the two of them staying out of the team for too long. He's shown a little bit, but I'd say still looks fairly raw for, you know, he is a first-year player. So I can't see Mason staying in the side for all that long.
From my point of view, I'm not looking at either of these two very seriously. Mark, you?
No.
All right, we'll move on then. Frankie Dalton, is it too early to jump on the Hopper train for GWS? So, Mark, you already mentioned him, forecasted him. Obviously, we know his potential as a top-line draft pick. Priced at $194,000, so a little bit cheaper than what we got the Parishes and the Olivers at. Scored 106 on debut with close to 30 possessions.
32 touches, 17 contested, I think.
Playing in a team that looks like they're going to sit in the top eight for the season. When you're a young player, getting support definitely helps your scoring potential a huge deal. Going early, Mark?
No, I definitely want to see one more week, because they were playing against a non-competitive Suns team on the weekend. Their next 4 weeks, I think, are really tough. They're looking at potential top four teams that they're playing over the next month. So, yeah, I think you definitely want to see another week from him. A lot of young people struggle in their second game, especially if it is a bit hotter. I'm really not sure. I'd find it really difficult to downgrade to him and keep him on my bench, yet it's almost too late to be bringing a $200,000 player onto your field because you want to sort of get all premium. So I think it's going to be a really, really difficult decision next week, and hopefully he scores a 50 and makes it easy for me.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. At this point in the season, you're generally not looking to downgrade to 200K rookies, because that's tying up 100K that you're not pumping into an upgrade. So unless you're sitting on a ton of cash, it can really affect your upgrade decision. So based on that, I think it is too early to jump on the Hopper train.
And I think that this is something that really does need to be analysed next week, and it probably will. If he does perform again this week, it will take up a decent amount of our show next week.
All right, so we'll move on to the outs and the ins for the week now. So outs this week, we're analysing the underperforming players in this category, as we do each week. The first one is effing Brody Smith. This question's posed by @SeekerSuperCoach. Smith looks to be a mid-pricer now, no longer that cheap premium that we'd hoped for. Would you trade Smith out on the back of a 22 on the weekend, meaning his break-even's 140? He's only dropped the 30K from his starting price tag, but he could drop a whole lot more.
Oh, God. You're getting visions from last year, mate.
Oh, yeah. That's why I stayed away, mate. That's why I stayed away. I was not convinced that that was just because of concussion.
Yeah, well, I mean, you'd probably have a better answer to this question than us because you did go through that experience last year.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I would probably look to trade him. I don't think I'd want to keep him for the entire season. I don't see him averaging 95. I think his good games, unfortunately, are speckled with poor games. His job is not to get the contested ball. So that means that when he doesn't get the handball receives in certain games, his score tanks. And I don't want to be relying on a player with no inside game at all that plays a fair bit of time on the wing. Just leads to just a yo-yo type scoring. So based on the fact that his price might crash to like under 350K in the next few weeks, to get the value back out of him, you need him to then score big and then go back up in price. I would probably bite the bullet and move him on. That's fairly aggressive though. I have not recommended trading out cheap premiums as such so far this season or mid prices.
And I think this gets back to your point a little bit as well. A couple of weeks ago, if you're trading out one of your sub-premium players, then you're really missing out on upgrading a rookie. So it kind of puts you back in the upgrade process. I think that you could make an argument that the last 2 weeks, Rory Laird hasn't been there, and we've seen two really low scores from Brody Smith. I think you could also argue that Adelaide's draw gets a lot better from here. They've played a lot better than 4-4 football so far. So I think that there's potential for him to come good, and I think that you're right that 95 average is probably out of question, but he could come good and sort of sit in that 85 to 95 average and comfortably sit at your D6.
That's a much more reasonable approach, I think. All right, next question from Joshua Gibbs. Brad Crouch, when will he live up to expectations? Ideally, he'd like 450K out of him, but do you think that's realistic, or should he and I just cut our losses? Faz, let me pose this question to you, mate. You've seen me gripe about Brad Crouch. What would you do?
Yeah, you were very happy with your move to hold steady.
Premature.
Yeah, I think with a 51 and a 46 in his two return games, the dreams of a 450 price point might be gone. For now, break even's at 90 at the moment as well. And given that he's only at 300,000, 313 is his price point, that's sort of pretty similar to a lot of the rookies that we're considering. And he was a guy that I didn't look up when I was putting together my rookie table before, obviously because he didn't start at the rookie price point. But, you know, maybe you have to sort of think about him as sort of a contemporary of the rookies right now if you're looking at who needs to come out of your team.
I think that that's a really good point you've raised, Faz, and a really good way of looking at it, that you should treat him as a rookie. And that's where he is different to Smith. You pick Smith as a keeper. You never picked Crouch as a keeper. You hoped that he got good and then you could sideswap him to a premium. But that seems very unlikely at the moment. He might come good, but I'd say it'd be more likely to happen in the back half of the year. He's had so many problems with his fitness right through the preseason, right through early in the season. He's already had to miss a couple of games and then come back through the sample. Seems to be able to dominate the lower league, but has had a bit of trouble adapting to AFL. Now, the same argument could be made with Brody Smith that the Adelaide draw is going to open up and he is going to get better. That's definitely possible, but I would have him up there in my top couple of priorities as a trade-out option at this stage.
All right, so I'm going to present a counterpoint. Even though I'm really frustrated, he's a definite keep for me. They've played Western Bulldogs and Geelong and lost both those games, and they are both looking like potential top four teams at this point in the season. And Brad Crouch did have a 36 disposal game in the sandfall before coming back in the last couple. The unfortunate part about Crouch is that he gets a lot of ball, but a lot of ball as an outside player. And so when their team wins, he's much more likely to score big than when the team loses. As an alternate view to comparing him to rookies that you guys have presented, I think if you compare him to a Mitch Brown type who's priced at 300,000, like I couldn't conceivably see Mitch Brown breaking much past 350, whereas Crouch, even if he scores 60, only drops to 300K this week, but he's way more likely to hit 100 score than most of the other rookies in the comp. He's more likely to hit it than Hewitt, he's more likely to hit it than Keys, he's more likely to hit it than Connor Menadue than Tippin Woody. Like, if you take the alternate view and look at his upside, I mean, it sucks that you've invested this much this far into the season, but at this point, when there's so many ripe rookies that really are at the top of their peak, I don't see Crouch being a legitimate trade-out target when he is probably at the bottom of his scoring potential right now. So I'll take a slightly different view, but I'm the hopeful Crouch owner who has egg on his face, so...
You also had played him on your bench last week in a week of carnage.
Oh, absolutely. But it's only because I had one looper opportunity and he was the only guy and we were playing Geelong, you know, so... I might as well put him as a loophole. I don't really lose that much. If I didn't have a looper opportunity, he would be on field. I promise you, I would have taken the 46 over Keys of 76 and it would have been a mistake.
Look, the upside is he's played two games without breaking down.
Oh, thanks, mate. All right, last question about potential outs. Barlow, hold if selected, seems obvious. But if he's not, what do you do?
Scream at your computer, mate.
Well, you had 39 disposals, apparently, in the waffle.
And he did 22 handballs. I think De Boer had 39 for Peel Thunder as well, and they lost by about 50 points.
If he doesn't get back in, though, would you hold another week and assume he comes back the week after, or would you actually trade him out? He's at 515, which, based on his average of 90, you'd actually take that as a trade-out price for Barlow if he wasn't coming back in?
Yeah, look, my plan is definitely just hold him for at least another week until we get a bit more information about what's going on. I could understand someone cutting your losses, but if you really start trading there, you're also stopping your downgrade-upgrade process and... basically treating it like an injury that could backfire.
I think they moved Barlow out of the midfield last year because Mundy was still in there, but Ross has talked about Mundy transitioning it to a third defender for the remainder of his career because he's not getting any younger and they're looking to inject youth into the midfield. And off that basis, I definitely think there's a spot for Barlow to get some midfield time. So I would definitely hold. Lastly, let's take a look at the ins for the week, potential ins. So the first question is from at JM Hawkins. Pritis now under 500,000. Should we be considering him this week or wait another week with 100 break even? 496,000, 87, 75, 77, and then the 123 on the weekend is his latest trend. Can average 115 for the season. Typically plays every game. Mark?
Yes, he's very, very high on my radar this week, and if I do an upgrade, he will more than likely come in just because of his consistency, his premium scoring history, his durability, the fact that he plays for a team that should be challenging for top four or top six. I know that he's had some really down games, but I think I heard a stat recently where his scores in away games were so low because he had an 11% disposal efficiency. Hopefully he could boost that over the course of the year. There's some concerns that he's carrying an injury that is the reason why he missed a week a few weeks ago, whether it's a groin or a hip. So that would be my main concern, but if he's fit and not injured, Pritis, this is like a yearly tradition, isn't it? Pritis gets under 500K and you bring him in and he does really well.
I agree with that, 100%. I'd pick him. Faz?
As you said, it usually pays off in the past when we've got Pritis under 500, so let's go for it. Let's roll the dice again.
Last question for the week from Will De Jong. Thoughts on Neil? Sustainable future, yes or no? So scored 110, 124, and 123 in the last 3 weeks since Fife has been out of the team. And we've seen his rise last year, and it looks like he might consolidate on that this year, averaging 110 for the season. But he's pretty fairly priced at the moment at 570. So you'd want to see him really be a top eight midfielder from here to be considering him as a pick, I would have thought. Mark, is he a top eight mid for you?
Oh, I think he's right on the edge of that. I think, and if you're going to be 110 to 112-ish sort of mark, that is right on the edge. My concern would be how many games of free you're going to win. He hasn't actually been tagged yet, as far as I know, because, I mean, in the last 5 weeks, he's gone 35 touches, 35, 40, 33, and 38. That is an insane amount of possession count. He has been doing quite well in Dream Team in that time, generally. But, look, he's a reasonably good pick, but I'd worry about a down game coming here or there, or... he's probably fairly priced, like you say.
Taz?
Yeah, it's about 20,000 more to go up to the Callum Wards, the Luke Parkers. I'd probably spend the extra money, I think.
All right, that's it for this week's show. Massive thanks for you, Faz, for joining us again this week.
Yeah, and it's been an absolute pleasure. I look forward to seeing you guys again later in the season.
Mm-hmm. Mark, hopefully you don't trash me by another 200 points this week. But
Look, I'm pretty happy we're both in the top 5,000, yeah, mate. We both had pretty tricky starts. So I just hope we don't get stuck in this gap. That if when you get stuck in that 2,000 to 5,000 ranking area, it can be quite a frustrating season.
Yeah, 100% agree. That is nice when you at least break or breach that top 1,000 for a little bit. You're not too far off mark at where you're sitting. And at least, though, you know, this is a respectable rank. When you can say top 5,000, as we do host the podcast, so we have higher standards. I'm not saying that if you're under 5,000, you're not doing well, Faz. But, you know...
50, mate. You're doing well.
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean. When you're giving advice every week, it does give us a bit of comfort to be in that top 5,000. So I'm happy we're both sitting in there at the moment. And Faz, I expect you to keep moving up 9,000 at a time. So.
Thanks, man.
Since we started hosting the podcast, 8 years ago, I don't remember either of us ever finishing outside of the top 5,000, Marcus.
Yeah. I was bragging top 500 until the last couple of years, so I'm hoping to get back up there, mate.
Yeah, let's just both breach the top 500.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
It was good. Like, I know you had a big week about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it really makes a huge difference when you just have that one big week when everyone else doesn't, and you get that huge jump, rankings jump. You really need that, and I've sort of been waiting for that for the first 7 weeks, and it was nice to finally get it.
Good on you, mate. All right, we'll leave it at that. So catch you all next week, and thanks for tuning in. See ya.
Yeah. Yeah.